Perhaps we'll get an insight into this strange life when he starts reading his poems, which I believe is not.
Well, I don't know, actually. I was just thinking, Tom, that I've been busy running about being poet here and poet there, and I haven't actually written any poems.
You came here on false pretense?
We're trying to write poems. Yeah.
We collected our railway tickets.
Mm. Well, I'm a major supporter of British Rail, actually. And if they actually analyse where they get their fares from, they'll find a lot of it comes from people like you and me. No, we were discussing it earlier. How I managed for 2 years to be a poet in residence in Leeds, and at the same time edit a magazine in Exeter. The answer is British Rail, long distance commuting. And hence these poems are somewhat scattered. I mean, this is supposed to be something to do with a book as selected, but I can't seem to get them selected. And I think I'm going to give them to somebody, probably him, to sort them out, as if he hadn't got enough to do.
Pinch a few minds, can I? Can I do a bit? Something's stuck me.
Tom and I actually were both here to interview for the job that Tommy got as poet in residence. I don't know whether I ever told you, Tom. I think I did. I was at that time working in a pub in Oxford, and it being Friday payday, I bought a bottle of vodka for the weekend. And in my break, I was walking around in the afternoon wondering who'd got the job. So I made a strategic phone call, and I was pleased that Tommy got the job. I'm disappointed that I didn't. So I sat outside the bottle and drank practically the whole bottle of vodka, with this mixture of being pleased and disappointed at the same time. Couldn't sort it out. I ended up going into work and I just couldn't stand up. They put me in a taxi and sent me home. But that was last year when I was about in. This year is slightly better. I think what I might do is read you some things that I wrote when I was a potato picker. This was a bad time. I ended up picking spuds in South Devon. And as is my wont, writing down the odd thing that came to me as I was picking the spuds. It struck me as odd that the place we were picking them was called Yetterton, which is near Colton Raleigh. So I had this fancy that the potatoes we were actually picking were coming out of the soil that Raleigh had probably originally used for his first experimental crops of potatoes. So I was cursing Sir Walter Raleigh in the words of the song, and writing odd things down on bits of paper sticking in my pocket. At the end of the month, I had this stack of very dirty paper and wrote these bits of prose that came out of it. Because when you're doing any sort of work like that, work that's repetitive and boring, can be quite useful, actually, because you don't have to think about it. I used to work in a factory in Leeds a long time ago, doing one single operation on what became eventually a gas turbine blade for jet engines. I could probably go back 15 years later and still do that same operation. It was just a repetitive movement of the hands 400 times a day, and you've done your whack. But I found that your head was quite free, and you could daydream and think about all sorts of things. Same with the spuds. We started inventing all sorts of silly ways to harvest potatoes. It also struck me that the people working with me were all rather like me. It was a funny mix of people who couldn't get any other work. Most of them knocked off once a week to go and get their dough. I wasn't on the dough, so I didn't have to do that. But there was a ballet dancer, and there was my mate Duncan, who was an actor, and there was me, a writer. And there were mysterious people like the man with the black dog, and we didn't know anything about. And there was another bloke who seemed to be a Zen Buddhist. We called him Zen Buddhist anyway. And there were a lot of people who came out from Budley Salterton, and would pick about 2 bags a day. I mean, to make a living, you had to pick about 20 bags a day, I think. But these guys would sort of pick about 2 bags over the whole day. Mainly they were sitting around smoking funny cigarettes. I don't know what was in them. So I wrote this thing with a long title called Casual Labour of Sidmouth, Budley, Salterton, Exmouth, Exeter and Districts Roundabout. Unite to form the Getterton and Colton Raleigh First Pragmatic Suicide Potato Picking Brigade, dedicated to the overthrow of everything organised. Ancient history. Before the potato, men scratched the earth with sticks or spent years crouched under rocks waiting for the weather to improve. Whenever anyone invented fire or the wheel or the smelting of metal, they were invariably clubbed on the head for daydreaming. Then came Lord Raleigh over the ocean bringing the potato, which is the beginning of history. Since then, thousands of years ago, our people have picked potatoes on the estates of Lord Clifton. We have known nothing else nor wish to, for we are pickers first and last. 5 days a week, all year round, there are potatoes to pick from sea to shining sea. In an 8-hour day, a good picker can fill 100 paper sacks with potatoes, each sack containing 56 pounds. I prefer to work with 2 baskets myself. It saves walking, and 2 good baskets fill a sack. I found the quickest method is to work 2 rows together, standing legs apart between them, filling each basket on either side of my feet. I pick from the furthest inwards and use the gloves not merely to protect my hands, but because they give me a bigger grasp. If by chance I pick stones instead of potatoes, I chuck them in too. My one rule is, if I pick it up, it's a potato. As I work, I search for the golden potato, for it is said that through these fields, Lord Clifton has distributed so many golden potatoes that entitle the finders to special privileges. But for myself, I am beginning to doubt the existence of golden potatoes. I am beginning to suspect a trick. Genesis, part 3. First darkness, then light. It rained for 40 nights and days, but the lads went on picking just the same. Lord Raleigh built a little boat to sail upon the flood and came to the shores of Potato Mother's Land. Lord Raleigh sent out a dove. The dove came back with a tuber in its mouth, and from the tuber sprang the potato plant. Lord Raleigh rolled up some of its leaves, and from this came tobacco. He picked off some of the fruits and ate them. From this came the tomato. Lastly, he came to the roots and found there the potatoes, which he boiled and ate. Then Lord Raleigh had a vision, or as some call it, a mystical experience, or as he himself says in Lord Raleigh's logbook, he experienced a state of non-ordinary reality, terrific. Lord Raleigh returned to Yetterton in Devon to find the flood had gone, and there he planted in these very fields we pick, my brothers, the original potato plant from whose issue this our harvest springs. And that's how we came to have the potato, children, and that's why, every year in spring, on the anniversary of Lord Raleigh's return, Lord Clifton walks to the centre of his estates and there releases a white dove. Potato Olympics. Early morning hangover handicap. Missing the bus and trying to catch up, three-legged picking, put the basket, tossing the King Edward, fighting the thistles, hurling spuds about, stopping others' work. Sore knee shuffle 300 metres, work till you drop. Filling someone else's bags by mistake, blind picking, staggering off, forgetting how many bags you've picked, sitting in the trailer, rained off, waiting for the foreman, spend it quickly. Well, Roger, I think it's an interesting field and we've seen some very fine picking so far. But as to who will come out with more bags this week than anyone else, well, it is police work and just about anything could happen, but Stagehand seems to have the showing. He's placed himself pretty well on the outside there by the hedge, Roger, and the slope is with him. He has the headland and the shelter and the advantage of a double sowing where the tractor turns, so we should see some fine performance from him. As you know, he's been picking very nicely for the last couple of weeks, pacing himself very well, and he's very much in trim and seems now to be at the top of his form. Mind you, Roger, if you'd asked me a couple of weeks ago, I'd have said Dancer. Dancer's very strong and with those arms of his commands a long reach, and he does have all those years of ballet training behind him. As he says himself, there's nae too many vacancies for male dancers in Glasgow. But he seems to be slowing down lately, and he's beginning to look, Roger, as if the steady plodding of old Stagehand there will pay off in the end. Well, Roger, they're off, and as they go into the curve, it's Dancer, followed pretty closely now by Stagehand, with the field spreading out behind them. Then it's Zen Bullish, picking very well today, overtaking Poet, who seems to be tiring already. And then on the far side comes Renegade Monk, followed by Sailor, then by the Sign Painter and Unknown Quantity. There goes Actor, who's out of the running now as he knocks off to go to collect his social security. We won't see any more of him today. And finally, as usual, late starter comes the bloke with a black dog. He's an unknown, but as we see, he's picking like a maniac and waving up the tractor to turn another patch. Just between the two of us, Roger, he's a very dirty picker and only takes the big ones. But there we are, Roger. Filling sacks is the name of the game. Some inventions that failed. As I worked, I considered simplifying the potato picking and thought out various methods. I proposed planting seed potatoes in baskets so that collecting the crop later in the year became a matter of picking up the baskets and shaking out the soil. I then developed in the laboratory of my skull potatoes with a thin metal strip at one end, so all the pickers had to do was walk along the field with powerful magnets. All this, of course, done without the knowledge of Lord Clifton or the foreman or the tractor driver, although he wears earmuffs and chews little yellow pills all day, isn't blind. My mate, Duncan, the actor, wondered might it not be possible to develop a potato with a small pocket under its jacket, like the airspace in an egg. Within the space, the potato would accumulate hydrogen sufficient to lift itself out of the ground when ripe, hovering there, waiting to be basketed. We considered briefly a feasibility study during the smoke break, hired a market research team and computer time, and canvassed investment in the project before stopping to pick another umpteen sacks. At lunch, eating marrow jam sandwiches in the trailer, I proposed to the great Potato Mother Convention a scheme for developing the self-picking potato, the SPP. The SPP grew little arms and legs. When ready, all Lord Clifton need do be to walk through the fields playing Rose of Tralee on a little hornpipe, and all the potatoes would skip out of the ground and into the paper sacks, shaking themselves clean as they did so. And might they not peel themselves too, and some chop the others up, and some chop the others up into chips? Ah, they might, Duncan affirmed, his mouth full of meatloaf, his thermos gripped between his wellies. And then where would we be? Tell me that. Laid off again, painting railway stations, shuttering on the motorway if there's any motorway to shutter, on the lump or selling encyclopedias door to door, or down the Dole office answering daft questions like who shot the bishop and how many trees in Spain. The scene that day was of a sloping field in intermittent sunlight. A dozen or so pickers gathered potatoes up and down the slope, each to his own sector. Later, a woman came with a boy, finding it difficult to establish her own space, and no one moved over for her. The trailer was moved at midday, closer to the pickers. A couple of times, the foreman drove up in the Land Rover, consulted with the tractor driver, and went away again. He did his business, yet seemed permanently abstracted, as if he lived within his body and profession incidentally, but was not of it, his life being somewhere else, perhaps, as captain of a whaler, or the man in County Hall with special responsibility for looking out for car number plates, spelling some obscene combination. Perhaps he made significant decisions someone has to make, as to that which decrees 59 metal studs on a leather jacket of decoration, that the addition of a 60th transforms it into a lethal weapon. Likewise, the tractor driver, keeping a general, though not lofty, distance from the pickers, with whom he occasionally conversed as middleman upon such topics as the difficulties of managing on an agricultural labourer's wage. Otherwise, he lived in his glass cap tractor, moving up and down the field, his earmuffs shutting out the racket he made. From time to time, it was observed he placed a little yellow pill from a phial on his tongue and took a swig from his water bottle. Asked, he spoke of them as his pills, explaining that they steadied him, and smiled vaguely from somewhere in the far interior. Potato Mother came and blessed the barren fields, and the Lord Clifton went in unto the Potato Mother back at the big house. Potato Mother conceived and brought forth the primal potato, and there was wide rejoicing. Men gathered in groves of the forest to sing her praises. No more need they plant stones and harvest thistles. Thus ended centuries when potatoes had to be carved from pine cones and boiled for years before they became succulent. Oh, Potato Mother, our soft Lady Willendorf, little sister of the pulpy skin, may we lie in thy fields forever, thou who hast given us the potato, from which we make boots and clothes and books and tractors, and which we eat and use as fuel. Without thee, O Potato Mother, where would we be but scrounging from the wayside and eating snails? The Picker's Prayer. Potato Mother, may thy potatoes be fat and plentiful, with weeds and stones few, and may they leap into my baskets, yea, may they leap into my sacks, that my weariness at day's end be rewarded amply. Amen. The Picker Heaven. No more potatoes, Sunday forever, no rain, no mucky boots, cracked nails, dust in my eyes, stones in my shoes. But the pay envelopes still come, it's best piecework, it's 1976 and there's a pub at the corner of the field selling cider at 1958 prices. So here I am in the public, waiting to be reborn to spend the next few million years as a Colorado beetle. Zix more points your scrump here, landlord. You'll be half a crown, God bless you. The potato wars. We are potatory, says David. And this, says he of his 11th pint of hard cider, is a potation. From his pocket he takes a potato. Now this is our roundhead potato. The royalists, the King Edwards, have been disallowed under common market rules. He puts the potato beside his drink and takes from another pocket another potato. Now this is your smoothie potato, your bureaucrat, your common market spud. Oh, the wars were terrible while they lasted. Some were for putting razor blades in the soup and going over with spikes and broken bottles to the next field to fight it out. But Lord Clifton, in his merciful temperance and justice, persuaded us against it. Instead, suggested he, why not pack the potatoes full of high explosives and old chain and roll them down the enemy's rabbit holes and blow them out of their beds? So we did that and disabled their tractors and kicked hell out of their sacks and baskets. And now the wars are over and we're not sorry, even though we lost. Potatoes out of Idaho, potatoes out of France, grow big and fat and plentiful, and in my basket dance. Two by two, two by two, potatoes in their jackets. Fill the baskets, fill the bags, and fill up my pay packets. Lord Raleigh went riding one day, and he met an old picker along the highway. His clothes were in tatters, his boots were in bits, for with stooping and picking, he'd picked clean through his wits. Old picker, says Raleigh to him, your rows be all pickered and your sacks be all in. Lord Raleigh, the picker, he said, I may be picked over, but they'll pick off your head. And that was what happened. Lord Raleigh got chopped, so don't count your potatoes before they're all cropped. And that is my moral, the theme of my song, as I pick the potatoes the green fields among. I don't know if I can do this one again. The triumph of Lord Raleigh. Oh, I heard of it down here a bit. Right bugger he has put his coat and robe for Queen, and her fancy, and he do say as he had his wickest way of her, and her virgin all her days. He were right fancy dancer, eh? Still, talk about he round here. Some say as Drake can't stomach he. Bit of fancy bloke, I reckon. Can't hold his cider, eh, Jan? But he were right good helmsman, better than Drake. Drake a good steersman. Oh, aye, an engineer. Built Plymouth Light up Dartmoor. I seen her, Jan. Go for miles. Course Raleigh were landed gentry. Squire here. Here's your taters, where he brought from New World. A were red Indian crop. Grew a in little heaps, for Raleigh had her. Oh, aye, says he when he's in America. And he sees a few of A. Try a few of A back here in Colleton Raleigh. And he ships home a ton or two. A grows all right, A bloody grows, John. But he's here no good. He's too bloody small, A giddy off. Tis drought. And now he's picking his raining bloody pig's bladders. But tis common market. Tisn't just drought forcing prices up. Tis A buggers sitting tea in bloody Brussels, bureaucrats. Brussels bloody sprouts more likely. Scrumpy disappearing. Now her same price as beer, spend a fair fortune in here, or does I, John? Could have a good laugh for a tanner once, night out on half a crown, here. Funny lot that there, casual labour, usual crew layabouts, labour exchange and social security scruffs, hippies and all. When I were a lad, it were mostly kids and women, had a week off school for her, potato picking and lacking about. Now it's your airy hippies, and he's here from Sidmouth smoking her funny cigarettes. That's enough of that. I mean, what struck me about it was, I remember being a kid years ago when we used to get a week off school. I mean, it was only half term, but we called it potato picking holiday, and you all went potato picking. And apart from earning a bit of money and getting your knees sore and your back sore, there would always be these sort of strange people, blokes who would eat worms for a bet, and strange women who were always threatening to take you off behind bushes and do interesting things to your body. But going back to it, doing it again, I mean, the whole bloody business had become computerised and industrialised. Everything was measured out. And everywhere there were these young men who were called trainee managers, who wore suits and had slide rulers and little calculating machine. None of the old blood and guts seemed to be in it. Now, what shall I do? I know what I'll do. I'll read a few poems from this sequence called, for the nicely ambitious title, The Abel Baker Charlie Delta Epic Sonnets. The definition of an epic sonnet is that it should be neither. And I really started out simply playing around, as I usually am, with the sound of Abel Baker Charlie Delta. But then I decided that Abel Baker and Charlie Delta were two old mates who hadn't met in years. One of them being a seaman, the other one being a landsman. And they meet and go drinking. And so the epic sonnets are about them and their night out. In various pubs, one of them being a pub in Exeter called Ship, which is a really nasty little bar, has on the side, it has this little inscription that's in the poem that says, "Next to mine own ship, I do most love that ship in St. Martin's Lane, Exon, Sir Francis Drake." The implication being that Drake drank there. I can't imagine why he would drink there rather than in Plymouth or somewhere near a home, and how he would get there and all the rest of it, and why that pub. But somebody suggested to me that he'd probably just get the train from Plymouth and have a day out in Exeter, like anybody else. But I wrote a piece for a local paper one time in a series that I was doing about different pubs in the area, in which I imagined Drake home from sea, probably stinking, probably filthy, probably got blood on his clothes, probably got foreign funny money. His language would be blue and he'd be carrying offensive weapons and he would be chucked out of that pub immediately. Said piece didn't go down too well with the management. I think it's a Burnie Inn or something now. It's one of those nasty little pubs. Where Drake drank. "Next to mine own ship, I'd almost love that ship in St. Martin's Lane, Exon," he do say. "Had to put it out, didn't I? Customer upset. All the half-pint bandits of the half-timbered interior. Young accountants, grockles. Reporter from the Echo, decent clientele. And his language, spitting on the floor he was. 6 months on the water and he stank fair. Had a dirty great sticker, 2-3 knives. Couldn't be having that, brewery at my back. Burnie Inn's up the wall. Called a jam sandwich, still he wouldn't go with his funny money. Right then, coppers come, put thee on the Plymouth train. Grew up in all the Spanish au pairs and completely upsetting Nigel." Nasty in here, isn't it? A jam sandwich is what the police themselves call those cars, the white jobs with a red streak down the middle. My mother has
the blood that I spilled.
Well, I suppose so, yeah. No, I tell him, Tom, my mother has this lodger who's a copper. He sort of tells me all these little tidbits of police information. The other nice thing that he told me was that on cold winter nights when you're on the beat, the warmest thing to wear is a pair of women's tights under your pants. So the next time a copper bothers you, ask him if his tights are fixed. Supposing it's Friday, I'm dancing with beer on my thighs. Now you've gone, it grows dark, Miss Nemesis of the 6 peacock feathers. Oh, the malady lingers. You've left me, my bird, my brown lady. Other roads, other strangers. Baker's Day Out. Don Polsky, Captive Nation Society, taxi to Lister Hill Social, train, bus home to the Fenton. Leeds, Bradford for sale, I see. North Sea created and packed. Jolly Jack the sailor. Back from the fallow sea, song and a laugh in the oak. Blithe heart cannot know. How I thick mix my Fanta with Coke. Oh, muy Valparaiso, near blew me apart. In far foreign parts, Chile and Argentina. Fell off the gangplank, fell in the drink. Thought here goes, I'm gone, I'll make a right splash. Those are all pubs around Leeds and Bradford. I mean, the pubs in this sequence are either in Devon or in Yorkshire. Reflection of my movements. And that name I really liked. It was a club in Bradford called the Captive Nation Society. It's for Lithuanians, Estonians and Latvians. They call themselves the Captive Nation. Good place to drink.
Stagger from poem to poem in this sequence. Poem to poem.
Knock at the door. Can I come in? Bloke 4 feet high. I'm your paranoia. Hey up, I thought. Got a license, chummy. You're joking, said he. Examine the fitments. Counting the forks. Countrywide survey. Routine visit. Government program. National importance. Double glazing inspection. Stand aside, chief. His brothers and sisters. Up, in and all over. No drink to offer. If only I'd known, could have dusted, papered the dog, unplugged the piano, curried the clocks, vacuumed the fridge and hidden my stash best Jamaican euphoria. But that's it, pal. I'm botany bound with no clean shirt on the good ship Blue, and it's too late now, California. This one called The One You Got 3 Days For in Eccleton Bewy is a collection of the punchlines of jokes. If you know the jokes, you'll know the punchlines. Walks into this pub with his elephant. Evening, Reginald. Drink for these travellers. Coin of the realm to invest. So the barman gives him a glass. In walks little Pierre. Not you with your duck again. Aye again, says the Highlander, or I'll slice your head off. And the little old lady recited with the roses on her knee. Di-da-di-da, di-da-di-da. £1 each to look at the swans, the Kerryman did say. And the colonel takes his bet. The curate opens the curtain. The postman does it all again, and the farmer says to the salesman, 2 aspirins and a wire brush at 6. 3 bananas and a Mars bar. Your Honour, I thought, either she's dead or she's English. Moo was all her mother said. But he never found the greensleeves way. She gave him his shirt and said, this time, you hold the pigeon. It's your round, Mr. Chicken Lips. The milky bars are on you, kid. Abel back from sea. Right then, lads, back from winter sleep. Next question, who bashed the bishop? How many trees in Italy? Do chickens have lips? Some of us wondered about some of you. Midlander, Irish, Shiksa, Gentile, Scouse of Barbados, Welsh, Geordie, Bangladeshi, Brummy, Pakistani, Cockney, Fish and Chipper, Cantonese, Gaujo, Jock, Jew, Wasichi. Or have I lost it, my invisible thread? Screw the National Front, the little brain cells winking out all over Europe, knocking out the epic sonnets. This is the joined-up writing, and it's a union job, Jimmy. 30 quid and I'll speak clearly, otherwise mumble, mumble, mumble. Comes from something with you, sometime, doesn't it? It's about the...
Coined it together.
It was all that argument with the Poetry Society about establishing a minimum 30 quid fee for readings. So 30 quid and I'll speak clearly, otherwise I'll mumble. I think it was your line, or was it mine? I can't remember. You mumble anyway, so...
I think it's good.
Makes up for all the lines of storm, doesn't it? As for you lot, trick or two I could tell. Tell or so, you should know. When I was in the marshes, young buggers like you. Rifle, side pattern, Sten, mortars, small arms, emergency ration. You lot wouldn't know. 56, Isle of Dogs, Russian Airborne Division. You won't recall what I can't forget. Lucky for you, I'm here now, and the Bolsheviks then were at war with just me. Ambush, landmine, tank trap, ACAP, double line trench, improvised nuclear device. Soon had them cornered, on my own, all alone, solo, all on me Todd. Some thanks I get, not a drink, young bastards. Take a look at this head wound. That's my amnesia, son. Then there's my books. These are all the titles of real books. Then there's my books, Surgical Blades and Handles, Young Wives Praying, Tripping for Cripples, all written in haste for money and fame. No, I've no real ambition. Young Wives Praying is the title of a little book that I stole from Exeter Cathedral. It had such a charming title and I couldn't resist stealing it.
What's it called?
Young Wives Praying. I think I might use the title for something. Charlie growing older. Man walked into a bar. It was an iron bar. I say, any vacancies, experienced drinker, 30 years service, references supplied, all leading landlords, your own words made up, small glass Saturn. Give us a number then, £2 till Friday. Fuss the way of exile down Egg Sandwich Road. Empty stomach blues, squeeze a half in, Tom. 4 bells, aqua pura, one of old exhibition. A wooden-legged woman, meaning a 10-bob note. 1 lady with a lamp, 1 iron duke, and 1 discoverer of gravity. Silly songs of spring, where beeth they then? 50 shilling tailor, ubby bloody flaming sunt. The Pussy Willow Song. Of course it was different when I was a dog. Bristol to China, 2x every weekday. No weather at all then. Fish chips, 10 woods, pictures, bus fare, change from 10 quid. Council houses from sea to sea. Little lambs wore underpants. Where that seagull stands stood the sailor's return I used to frequent. Many a noon and night with the old ukulele. Met my missus in the bar, skinny as a whisper, 16 years ago. For all the money that I spent on friends of yours. And all of this was Pussy Willow, as far as you could fly. Burns's line was, all the money that I spent on friends of mine. Money is all the money I spent on friends of yours. Aye, and there is another world, Mr. Rambo, and it's this one, Jimmer, saith the varmint. Though you don't have to go someplace else, still you can't stay. And finally, old mates of mine, Broom Reed and Harris, Timothy White and Taylor, Freeman, Hardy and Willis, put a few away together, stopped a few going bad. But Monkhouse and Glasscock, old Attles and Pollock, where the hell are they now? Sluggett and Powell, the butchers, just ordinary blokes. Mr. Purse, the banker, Carver and Crook, dentists. Not a one of them for the cheap, brilliant team. Every man a prince, every one a gold watch, 4 acres and a cow. All gone for a Burton, Bristol and further west, in their weaver to wear a raincoats and the Marks and Spencer's vests. Playing with those names, they're lovely, those names. And the names of people who have jobs that fit their names. I remember at one time writing down a list of them. The mace bearer at Exeter University is called Mr. Tripp. My bank manager at William and Glynn's in Exeter was called Mr. Purse. My dentist was called Carver. There's a whole list of these funny names.
I
remember
talking about a firm of solicitors in Hexham called Swindle and Rob.
what are the Leamington you've got? Yeah. Wright Hassel.
Wright Hassel.
The solicitors in Leamington called Wright Hassel.
Wright Hassel. Good to them. Got them for a lot of trouble. Been no trouble at all, said Mr. Hassel. Mr. Wright agreed. Let's see. Shall I be more serious? Yes, let's be more serious. This is a sequence of poems that I wrote originally because a friend of mine... Did you want me to do something with this, by the way?
No, I think it's...
Or it's done.
It's already done.
Yeah. A friend of mine was a printmaker. Who was working on a series of prints on the Tristan and Isolde business. So he had this bright idea that I should write some poems and that together we would produce this nice little book of his prints and my poems. So off I went and wrote 12 poems, drawing on that Tristan and Isolde business. And about a month later, I went back and saw him, and I said, I've got the poems, we've got the prints. And he said, oh, no, I'm not doing them, I'm doing something else now. So I was stuck with the poems, so that the poems were written with the idea of having prints in mind. The prints didn't ever come about. Not that it matters. One for sorrow. On the ocean, useless to say I was drunk, couldn't help it. Useless to say anything, then I loved you. Weeds on the sea, the horizon adrift. Waves heave, hoisting the spray's flags. Sea loose and flinty, stone in its making. I fancy I see animals, bushes and rocks. In the motion, words I had seen thrashed into nothing that nothing gives back. Only clouds, one shaped like a raven. Sometimes a skimmer, garbage picker. Bird's wing lifting away from the lifting. I see everywhere the same belled planet's edge and love you. Two for nobody. How he was king of these rocks and gorse, all he told me. Granite country, heather stiff in the sea wind divided at Cornwall. His kingdom, she was a swallow bringing one strand of her swallow's hair. His woman, part of his stony possessions. Ah, but love set her dancing, and the rest, how she sneaked off to find me out by the elder tree, how again and again in the two-backed beast dance we went, crazy and careless, were found, hounded, beaten and branded. Ah, well, shrugged the citizens, lies, guilt and old grief, betrayal and such, an old song a wanderer sings for his bread, and each time changes he sings it, love, love, wherever love is, changing its sheets. Come find me. Three Tales of the Hunter. I crouched, hands and knees beneath thorn apple, mosquito seeding its eggs in my arm, and waited. What I caught, I killed or brought, struggling home. When I found my enemy, I cut him to pieces and went, singing and bloody by the rowans. But you, love, now shadows cast trees and I'm contrary, rain my fine weather. By night I'm prowling your moonlit flesh, your all legs, arms, owl cry and leaping, love, the cry in my throat, some animal, its life in its cry. And I swim with the fish, I fly with the raven, I go with the shuddering creatures into their darkness. Four, being a prayer to the western wind. Without you, the moon's failed waters, lost wheats of the Sahara. A woman hides in these syllables. She goes singing and dancing through fields of tall yellow to the sea. But the pastures are an old grit in my teeth, the eastern forests an ash and smoke. I pick among shrubs for one leaf of you. On the sea or high in the treeless upland, where I almost hear you, the wind whines to itself, be thou with me, love, the corn in its chaff, or where have I heard it? Ships, ports, wharves, men leaning on the cathedral stones. I've been everywhere talking to everyone. No one has seen you. In the snowy north, in Germany and on the Atlantic, amongst men who are gulls' feasts and the dreams of ravens, it's your face I fail to find in mirrors and water. Asleep, I see you, walking as once you were by the river. But awake, sleep has kept you. I'm miles away where I barely think how your sounds are, and must come round the world's other side, finding again the same strangeness opens your face in the gates of the city, the wanderer home in his bed again. Five, which is here by the river. Windless days, reeds, tall grasses, motionless. Cormorant a shoe opens his wings, heron a stopped blue air. Kestrel a moment standing in flight, come out, love, from wherever. Boats turned over like the hands of sleepers, come out from the water birds of the shadowy, water-clogged marshland. Come see me here by the river, but you, where are you? Among these reflections, these lights, do you see me? Throw a stick in the water. Oh, then, come out, love, and see me, a face in the water. Six, the wife's complaint. It's for love, they told me, and brought me across the high sea. In his rainy country of haunted plumbing and traffic, not a damn thing works. If he's king of these fields and once loving, what if I'm bored as the moon with itself, tired and bombarded, a waterless ocean? Watching the ploughman leading a white ribbon of birds to the world's rim, I'm sick of it all, or I envy the gull's easy lift and long to be lost as the larks in lark song over the moorland. These my hands, first and last, those we love touch, that in passage from hairline to heels could make you forget till in one gathered up fire you lose even your name, sight of my face, number you thought. So then it's true, we're meaningless, here on the earth, tupping and dying. Soiled sheets and nail-bitten battlement, his feet that smell of old wood, cradling his head, crying, love, love me till death. For through us, nowhere is somewhere. Someone is running here in the space otherwise empty. For a husband, maybe I'm rope, coiled and used. No doubt I'll be used again. For another, I can be woman to man. Tristan Isolde, Isolde Tristan. Seven, when he can't sleep for thinking. Other night, program there. Other nights of muttering, knives scraping stones, wanting through grunts and half sleep to kill anyone. Won't, where he can't, bear for its loss his possessing her, beside her thinking who else had called through her hair his little death's loneliness, beached on that shore his mind ends, and she spent and howling. Gossip, a thorn bush, my bird, stay with me, her voice ablaze in his skull. In his mind digs a pit and burns her, surrounds her with razors, broods over footprints and stains. Love makes some sing and shrinks some, brings down his fist and will own what he can't own in women, or else rattle her, give her away in the street corner, the prize in the leper's race, but have done any way, take off and damn her to hell, slam the door forever shut after him. She sleeps in her pink flesh beside him. 8. The singer. Nights when he is peering through mist at the ship breaking coast and would be there. A flat song. The warrior scowling under the helmet, a girl, her breasts of white china clay. Nights on the wire where his body rotted, an example to all in those trenches. In spite of the knife, the club, the fire, to burn him, the gun, he would go back crazy where she's anyway forgotten him. He sings, show me the wind seam or a lovelier woman. Continents, rivers, a vain young man is the singer, the peacock singing, oh love, a mire so muddy. Who'd walk there? 9. Shorty's advice to the players. In the flinty upland of sheep and ravens, they dreamed each the other's vision. Birds, these flowers bursting, 1,000 years back tramped in the battle's muck. Forget the nights, a fist on a field of azure, his lady, her feet on the chained swans, not able to turn the stone cheek to his cheek and cry. He would not, small in his armor, tender as mollusk, stone in the cathedral. Hitched her skirt on his lance point, laid her down, not first, last, nor long remembered. Went, bum, singer, a fool, the black, furious horseman, nothing worked out. His death full of briars, a black sail, a white sail, he's glimpsed in the magpies, jittery flying. Little brother, she won't ever come back now. Get used to it. And 10, the tale unfinished. At the end, there's no love without death comes along with the wedding dress. In the ring on the bridegroom's midnight finger, either way, there's death, bleak as that bird that's king on his stone pile. So I shrugged and loved you. Your face sings now in my head, where without you I'm snail dragging his tongue across stone. I'm the bell that rings on its own windy space. I'm out with the aging light of the stars and as lonely. And we're not, love, each as we each imagine, more lost in each other's distance, wearing our separate flesh. Other times, with the gift of your moving, sometime with me, I am out of all mind and recall your running goose flesh towards me. As you ran, I thought how you were a message folded like prayer, delivering itself. Called Tales of Urias the Shapeshifter. I don't know who Urias is, really. I think I have 3 poems written at different times. The first and second and fourth of the Songs of Urias. The third one, I know what it is, but it just won't get itself written down. This was the first of them. I was up in the West Riding teaching one of those courses up at that Arvon has in its place up there. It's a very steep-sided, dark little valley with a stream running through the bottom, Beck, called Colden Beck. It's very cold. You get about an hour of sunlight in that valley once a day. And through the valley are distributed the ruins of 14 cotton mills, cotton, even though it's Yorkshire. And walking through this lot with all these old dams and steps and leats and so on, somebody commented that this. You know, this lot was contemporary with Blake, and these were the dark satanic mills that he'd been talking about. And they'd gone. They were still there. The suffering was gone. And, you know, the trees have taken it back. It's a deserted little valley now. But I got to thinking about this character, this person, Urias, being someone who had lived and worked there at the time that these mills were in operation, and made up a sort of biography for him, that he was a man who became a kind of lay preacher at the time when preaching was, could have gone, it went two ways, of course, it split. I mean, one split was political and resulted in organization, political kind. The other was Methodism and all that lot. It went off in the other direction. Because further up the valley, there's this marvelous bowl in the hillside, which is a natural little amphitheater. A lot of rocks spilled about and good stones for sitting on, one big rock in the middle for putting the kids on so you can keep an eye on. Which was used, it was a preaching hole. And halfway up the muddy cliff face, there's a rock for standing on, and then another rock into which a hole about this big has been cut. It's a recess. Good place for putting a candle, it'd be shielded from the wind, and the book, and the preacher would stand up there. They still have every year a service in that preaching hole. And we tried it out, you know.
Who has the service?
The local church do. But it was non-conformist. I mean, that was where they held their services. We tried it out for reading. I sent one of the students up to read some poems, and it's beautiful. Lovely place for reading. So that's really the kind of genealogy of this character, Urias. First he was stone, the great sleeper. The company of other stones was no blessing. Stone still he'd talk with the white, hurrying mane of water. No one believes it. Glimpsed in and out woods, following the beck, by the downrush forgot of his words for water. Then a bird was his lifting winged shadow dropped down the valley. In his skull dreamed again smoke, mill waste, the cotton spinners, dreamless sleep, Pennines, dark and satanic, so he sang, Jerusalem. Man again from gutturals, making his first sentence, singing through looms and his grudging masters all the songs of the settlement. A country their god had forgotten his blessing. The birds they sing once there and fly off, leaving no message. By the stream of a Sunday would he fish caught, walk and fight. Sometime in rage a framebreaker, speechmaker, read the London correspondence. And with others came in the blue withering light at day's edge down the mill shadow, some but 6 years picking cotton waste, always hungry. Brooding years after, he'd ask if a man believing in silence should talk much, went preaching, the book of black words in his breeches pocket, till at evening his clogs, pounding the hillsides he's famous for, he's come to the praying hole. Behind him the gap in the rock face is the stone's mouth speaking through him. The birds and the beck's noise and his people around him are one sound. Then with the voice that learned speaking, over the groan of flywheels he's urged his half-fed congregation up from the stones, till over the magpie's speech and the jays, the woods fill with the shout, Hosanna. Well, I think I've got them anyway. Yeah, the second
one.
One
towards the end.
Yeah. Well, actually, see, I cheat because the fourth song of Urias is also the fourth poem of Tristan Crazy. Cheat like hell. I didn't actually intend it to work out that way. A bloke who put this together didn't consult me when he did it. And he actually invented the section called Urias Poems. And, you know, I then thought, yeah, okay, let's do a sequence of poems, all the songs of Urias. Having.
Same book, different title.
That's right.
Anybody ever written any of them?
Well, the Urias didn't get rid of it. The second is this one.
10 years has been doing it, yes.
I'm getting away with it. The second one is this. All this elaborate disguise, no one's here anywhere under Orion, under the new moon's cup of rain. Light divided over the moor, in the fields of the bronze makers, sheep, bracken, ponies, stony, rain-sodden furniture of tour and distance. With a stone to break you, with a stick's point slipped through the ribs, after came farmers and hunters scraping for tin. Setting stones, it's a warning to cross still. Back when the moon was the pale, banished wife of the sun in the lost tale of the arrow maker's vision. All their tools, bones, legends and gods are one wash through the peat now. Scuffed down a bird's share of porridge in bilberry, snarled among scrawny cattle, dogs and their stink trailing after. Then to the city whose names mean water, a people he lives with, calling themselves people of this land. Among grey rocks he found and took her, her eye glimpsing a half county stopped at the ocean, blue sheen, two boats in the ancient distance, where she is the sea and she dances. The setting for that one is Dartmoor, Kester on Dartmoor. People of this land are the Dunnomi, apparently simply just means people of this land. I mean, most tribal names turn out to be the people, we the people, people of this place. And the city whose names mean water, being Exeter, is X, is simply water, Isk, Iska, Whisker. Same word. Can't find what I'm looking for, just stay here. An end, I suppose. Huneus the shoemaker. I don't know who Huneus is either, just like the name.
More towards the Old Testament, is he?
Aye, maybe. If I forgot, be it. He was content all those years carving his children from wood. Two nails banged in for eyes and you're done, he told them. Twice wed he was, his first lost in childbed, six that survived out of infancy. One son he named Walk in the Lord, another Go Forth. Taught them his trade that they make provision. Working late, kept by his lamp to prayer and close study, frowning under the lintel. All his life the same music, patching and stopping up drafts through 60-some winters. So much to ask out loud for. The dark space in his mind he called God told him so. Mend, shiver, make do when hungry, suffer when must, but make good. He was content anyway, at nightfall hunting the wild birds of the river, a man in his own space. Or so we believe, that he died blameless and lonely, I'm sure of. What I ought to do is just throw this all in the air and keep what comes down. No, I don't want to eat those. Don't want anything to do with those. getting fed up with all these poems, really, I think.
Got a lot to choose from.
Yeah, so many. Got to get rid of this one. This one. It happens, spring comes to the river. Grass freshens, the reeds remember the dry sound last year's wind made amongst them. These pollards, clubbed and splay-fingered, are the red willows of my childhood. These are the same birds born over and over, rising in the estuary. Then the swan flies, his wing beat through the air, a slow, heavy applause that ceases, sighting the weir to turn there, takes his precise self in one motion down to the furrow he's cut in still water. The wholeness of him, feather by feather, the white sail of a ship gone long since to the horizon, or the lance of a returning crusader, or a white banner bearing, perhaps, good news at last from the kingdom. Playing field observations. In the light before rain, counting the hard little... In the light before rain, counting the hard little yellows of the day's eyes, I went down the sea-opened valley. A neat country, it said, of parkland and floodplain, squared like the blind man's garden between the waters. Sang goodbye to the elms, glimpsed by the canal, blue smoky lift of a heron, accepting my birthday. How the shadows move in at such news and are strange in the light. This feather left for his marker, my brother the crow had dropped by the goalpost, seems a dead man's finger, keeping his page in the unfinished biography. And these three, which sort of belong with those two, really, old postcards of the river, same river, X. Again, I was writing with a particular illustration in my head that didn't work out. I have a stack of old postcards that I found somewhere years ago. They all concern, nothing to do with the poems, they all concern one particular family around the turn of the century up to the last ones dated in 1914, the last ones being from, I mean, they run through the family through courtship and marriage and holidays on Dartmoor and bicycling ventures down into Cornwall and trips to London. And then gradually, as the kids grow up and the kids move away, you get little postcards from their honeymoon hotel in Barnstaple with a little cross marked on the window. Things like that. But the last postcards of all are from France, where the sons had obviously been sent in World War I. And then that's the end of the whole sequence. I mean, the assumption, my assumption is that the sons were killed, and that was the end of the postcard collection. I keep meaning to do with something with the whole stack of them sometime. Probably when I stop buying rail tickets, I'll do that. So that thinking about these old postcards, I thought that I was writing three poems that went with three of these postcards. But when I came to look through the stack of postcards, I found that I'd made two of them up. And only one of them actually existed. One of them turned out to be a painting in a pub down the canal, which is this first one. View of the city with boats, some rigged for a journey. The canal in watercolour. 1830, where the poor stew nettles and fennel, all England affords them. But these trees and sails in the wide space, a woman heaving a basket home on her shoulder late in the daylight, seem to belong there. If my country is slowly lighting again, its villages opening their doors and the neighbours waving, that dream is over. In the grey photograph, three who are recently soldiers grin from France, where they died, rifles aslant, at a slow pace, shoulder to shoulder, in perfect step, following the piper, or huddled in mud, died in any case. What for won't go on a postcard? Fishing down the canal on Sundays, I find their initials on stones by the lock gates, standing easy together, just as they left them. And the third one, which is the only postcard that does exist, which is a village street with a group of villagers standing around looking very hostile, presumably at the cameraman having a photograph taken. My guess is that he's got one of those big black cloths over his head and probably looks a bit fearsome anyway. And it's probably the first time they've ever seen a camera. In disbelief at this new thing, the camera, workmen freeze in the street. One raising a stick in suspicion, a boy mocking and pointing. Beside him, a woman dark in the face, as the sunless underwing of a bird still turning away.